This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Democrats are herd animals that when you put something in their eyes and ears over and over and over again, even if it's the most ridiculous thing in the world, they will believe it.
The thing is, you know, there's still large segments of the American population who still view Fauci as almost like a heroic figure. They don't think he necessarily got anything wrong when he got almost everything wrong.
That is not conspiracy. That's not theory. That is documentary proof from the Department of Homeland Security that non-citizens are registered to vote.
Communists are really good at capturing the ideas industry. And the ideas industry is our universities, our K-12 education, our media, our think tanks.
We talk a lot about the system. We've talked a lot about it in the past, and with these new Fauci revelations of his emails and the lying and everything else, it's a good time to spend at least a couple of minutes and talk about it again. And this is what the system is. You already know this. The evidence during COVID was wild. Our institutions, really all of them, have been conquered by evil communists. The communists who run the institutions. Now, instead of the institutions keeping each other in check, the institutions work together at all times to advance the revolution and whatever is bad for the country. And so it doesn't matter what it is. You can pick your issue. You can pick anything. If you open up the border. Well, the local college professor will say open up the border. The local news station will say open up the border. Everybody, every Democrat politician will say open up the border. Half the Republic. This is how it works. And when they all repeat the same thing all the time, it has an incredible effect, especially on the stupid people in our country. They're known as Democrats. Democrats are herd animals that when you put something in their eyes and ears over and over and over again, even if it's the most ridiculous thing in the world, they will believe it. One of the craziest things about these Fauci emails since they came out is not that he's a lying narcissist sociopath. I knew that already, and you probably did too. It's the media's complicity in all of this. Remember, the media itself is an institution. So if there's some lying government troll trying to wreck the economy and knowing he's lying the whole time, you want the media to stand there and interrogate him and defend you. But instead, Tom Elliott put this one together. This is how it went.
The single most respected voice in the pandemic. It's Dr. Anthony Fauci.
The man who's become known as America's doctor.
The nation's top infectious disease expert, Anthony Fauci.
You are seen to many as a superhero.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, American hero and New York Yankee fan.
You've done so much for this country in terms of this crisis, so I really appreciate your insight.
Who better to give us answers that we can trust than Dr. Anthony Fauci?
The perfect person to answer our questions today. Joining us now, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Dr. Anthony Fauci. Appreciate your candor.
Dr. Fauci, appreciate the candor.
We appreciate your service to this country.
We appreciate your service.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service.
Greatly appreciate your service to America.
Thank you for your 37 years of service, I believe, to seven presidents, and thank you for your work over the past year.
The great news is you're sticking around in the Biden administration. We are so grateful to you, Dr. Fauci, for everything you do.
Thank you so much for everything you do.
Thank you very much for everything that you do.
That's how propaganda gets spread, and that's how propaganda gets cemented in the eyes of the people. And let's not forget something. Let's remember this. We also have other documents that have come out. It wasn't just the universities. It wasn't just CNN. The intelligence community, our intelligence community, yours, mine, here in the United States of America, they were involved in all these lies too. To what end? Well, let's remember something. Donald Trump was president, They didn't want him to be president. So much of this stuff, this COVID insanity, was used to massage some election rules. And then we had a very shady looking election. And I'll remind you again that this guy was a special agent at the FBI.
I was very involved. Our field office, FBI San Francisco, was very involved in helping to protect the U.S. elections in 2020. And I think we can all agree, or I think many of us can agree, that it was a very safe election. We talked with all of these entities I mentioned regularly, at least on a monthly basis, and right before the election, probably on a weekly basis, right? If they were seeing anything unusual, if we were seeing anything unusual, sharing intelligence with technology companies, with social media companies, so that they could protect their own platform.
It went all the way into the intelligence community. Our institutions are still, now I know things are better now, that we're making improvements. Our institutions are still working together against you and against me. That's simply a fact. We have to be aware of it. And the reason I brought this up wasn't just to trash Fauci, although I love doing that. They're going to do it again with something else. There'll be another George Floyd. There'll be another Fauci. There'll be another Russiagate. And all these institutions will again coordinate and repeat the same thing over and over again. We have to be sharp enough to recognize it and expose it. All right? All right. I don't even know where to begin on the show. We have Governor Ron DeSantis joining us next. I mean, who's better than Ron DeSantis? He'll talk about his response to COVID. We're going to talk about communism. So much more coming up tonight on I'm Right. And before we get to any of that, I want to get to this. I want to get to your T levels. I want to get to your energy level. I'll focus there. Your energy levels. How are they? And be honest. Is it 3 p.m. and it's time for a cup of coffee or two? Hey, brew a new pot. Are you out of gas all the time? You're out of gas because you haven't been taking natural herbal supplements from Chalk. That's why you're out of gas. Chalk, the anti-communists at Chalk, they are here to change your life. And I am not over-exaggerating when I say they have changed my life. I have taken a male vitality stack from Chalk for 4 years. I hate drugs. You know that. I don't want needles in my arm. Natural herbal supplements, 4 years. I'm a different person in every way than when I started. Want to change your life? Go get a subscription. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, as the saying goes, you can tell a lot about somebody by who their enemies are. And now that Fauci is back in the news for all the right reasons, I did enjoy this little passage from August 7th, 2021. It says, quote, Governor DeSantis is a complete disgrace. He is blocking local authorities from mandating masks in various locations, including schools. I should note that we live in Texas, and we went to Florida multiple times during COVID because that was the beacon of freedom where you could actually walk around and do things like a normal human being. And the man responsible for that joins me now, the greatest governor in America, Governor Ron DeSantis. Governor, Fauci's not a big fan.
Yeah, well, you know, I wore that as a badge of honor. I was really happy to see that that was out there. And it's true. We fought him, you know, every step of the way. But it's interesting as you read those. I dealt with Fauci in February of 2020 when there was reports of this. We had seen it in China, Italy. And he was actually more moderate about this. He was saying don't put on a mask. He was not recommending shutting down. And then I think what happened is the media really tried to, make hay of this. Obviously, they wanted to hurt President Trump. He saw that the more he leaned into a more apocalyptic view, the more press he was getting, the more famous he was getting. And so when you see him acknowledge in these things, oh, yeah, it didn't come out of the Wuhan wet market, but then publicly saying, if you said it came out of the Wuhan Institute, that you're a conspiracy theorist, you know, there was a reason for that. And it was really so much ego driven. And here's the thing, I'm a governor, right? I didn't study pandemics. Obviously, I get elected to lead. I got to figure this stuff out. This is like his whole life has been dedicated to this. And how many things was he wrong about?
wrong about lockdowns. He fought us when I mandated schools be open. He would come down to Florida in 2020. He would do hits on local media in Florida, basically trashing us and what we were doing. I mean, this guy was unbelievable. But here's the thing that I think bugs me about. I'm glad this came out. Clearly, conservative voices are talking about it. I think it's probably getting very little play on legacy media. And the thing is, you know, there's still large segments of the American population who still view Fauci as almost like a heroic figure. They don't think he necessarily got anything wrong when he got almost everything wrong.
Governor, can you walk us through the decision-making process? This stuff fascinates me when I talk to people who are in power of you making these calls to keep things open, because you were making these calls when there was a lot of very scary predictions out there. I mean, I remember like it was yesterday, they're talking about 50 million people going to die and things like that. But you're the governor of Florida. You don't want to have 5 million dead Floridians on your hands. How do you make these calls?
Well, we are the most demographically elderly state in America. Yeah. And COVID had a disproportionate impact on elderly. We had a lot of nursing homes, so we had a lot. I mean, this was potentially catastrophic for our state. But, you know, we are also looking at, you know, what is the legitimate power of government to act or not act in some of these situations? And so I had to think of those things, too. It can't just be do whatever Fauci says. Even if you thought he was right, you still have to recognize we're in a constitutional system. So one of the things that we did, we viewed it as something that was more at risk for elderly. We didn't see data early on even that kids were at risk or healthy people. So we prevented hospitals from discharging sick patients back to nursing homes. New York did the opposite, remember, to tragic results. They were shipping the infected seniors back to nursing homes. So we did take action to try to mitigate, but it was pretty clear by April of 2020 that this thing had actually already spread a lot. You weren't going to be able to stop it by just shutting down society for another 2 weeks. And the fact is, most of the people who got it had mild cases, you know, which was a good thing. And so the notion that you're going to like lock down a 19-year-old college student, no. You do the opposite of that. So we did. I remember I issued an edict. Well, I did two on the K through 12 schools. Oh my gosh, I got so much crap for this when we did it. We said every school has to be open. Parents can do virtual. If the parent wants that for their kid, we'll offer virtual. But the schools have to be open, and every parent has a right, if they want their kid's rear end in a seat in that school, they have a right to do that, because obviously that's going to be best for the kids. Sports, all that stuff has to continue. I mean, we had to go to war with people in Florida. Our athletic association was trying to cancel that. But when we did that, the union sued us. And what they were doing demonstrations in front of our Department of Education building with hearses, with coffins for kids, saying that all the kids were going to die and all the teachers were going to die. So the hysteria was real. Jeez. Fauci opposed us opening the schools in 2020. And I remember on the universities, we had to fight with the universities. I said, they said, if you don't have restrictions on these kids, you know, they're going to get COVID. And I'm like, yeah, they will. And they'll get over it. And then they'll build immunity. And then we'll go on with life. And that's exactly what happened. If you were in Florida State here in Tallahassee, and you were here in August of 2020, when school went back in, they were at bars, they were at house parties, they were being college kids. And I'm sure there was a lot of COVID. I think almost no one even went to the hospital during that period of time. And then it went on. And so we were doing that. And now the thing that frustrated me, so basically it was just looking at data. I had some guys like Jay Bhattacharya, who was at Stanford. Now he's the NIH director. He was always saying, and he was getting the tar kicked out of him by liberal faculty at Stanford. I had Martin Kaldor from Harvard. He was getting the tar kicked out of him. We had Dr. Gupta from Oxford, and over there was even crazier. So I just relied on a handful of people who had the courage to speak out. But what I found after doing all this, there were actually a lot of people in the medical profession that knew Fauci was full of it. They knew that this idea that we were going to be indefinitely restricted and locked down was not evidence-based. They knew the masks didn't work.
to stop something like COVID. But they didn't have the courage to speak out because there was such a convergence of all the elite institutions in our society to enforce this narrative that when you spoke out, it came at a cost. And I always tell people, I've done campaigns, Congress, governor, all this stuff. I've taken on a lot of big fights in my day. And if you add, and you get incoming when you do that, that's just the way it is. And most of it's false, but that's, you know, that's what you sign up for. If you add up all the incoming I've taken throughout my entire career in public life and compare it to what I got during COVID, I got more during COVID than everything else combined because the narrative was so obsessively being put on the American people. And so, yeah, we were a ray of sunshine. We were a refuge of sanity. But it bugs me to this day when we had the mandate that schools had to be open. We had like Good Morning America outside some of our rural schools in Florida. And like basically the subtext of the report is, oh, my gosh, you know, these rural hicks are sending their kids to school. They're going to die. That's what they were trying to do, that narrative. So then we go 2 weeks. We're in mid-August now, late August. The sky hasn't fallen. I thought for sure the rest of the country would have to have kids in school at that point. And yet in places like San Francisco and Chicago, they kept them out for another year, year and a half. And so it was a complete unwillingness to look at the evidence. Obviously, somebody like Fauci, if he says return to normal, then he's not going to be getting interviewed every day on TV, right? So he wanted to keep this in the news because it basically served his desire for more fame.
Governor, you're so right about that. What strikes me, it's not hard to figure out why Fauci would want to keep this thing going. You can read the emails. He was in love with the whole thing. COVID was his Super Bowl. It was the greatest moment of his life. What I have always confused about is why so many other parts of the system, you keep bringing up the media, that was maybe the worst one, the medical profession, again, not all of them, love Dr. J, but so many parts of the system wanted to keep it going too. And it was very clearly, it was obvious they wanted to keep it going. Why would you want to keep something bad going? And it was like universal across the power players in our society.
Well, one, look at big tech. I mean, you know, they were really infamous with their behavior during this, because if you tried to put up a post on Facebook in March of 2020 saying lockdowns do not work and are unscientific, that post would get censored and taken down. I had Bhattacharya on some of these guys talking about there's no scientific basis to force masks on school children, and Google and YouTube censored it at the time. So those companies were basically serving as an arm of the government by trying to squelch dissent, but they also got wealthier during COVID. I mean, let's just be clear. The Magnificent Seven did better during COVID. It was the small businesses, the mom and pops, that particularly in the lockdown states, who really took it in the chin. So if you look at what the tech companies benefited, if you look at the spending CARES 1-2 Biden stimulus during that whole 12-month period, it was really one of the most significant transfers of wealth from kind of middle income working people to some of these other institutions in society. And it wasn't just that, oh, you know, they did some dumb restrictions. That precipitated really bad fiscal policy. It set the fires for the inflation that we've been wrestling with ever since. And so the hysteria that developed, and yes, some of it was people pursuing their own personal interests, but had really negative effects across health, across liberty, across fiscal, all these different things, you know, go back to, you know, the Fauciism that was. And I remember when I would clash with him, Republicans at the time had like a 75% positive view of Fauci. I mean, he really was speaking as almost like a demigod in those first couple months of COVID. And so deviating from him. And that's what they would do. They would attack me saying, you know, Governor DeSantis isn't following Fauci. He's not following the White House task force, all this other stuff. And, you know, I was like, guilty. Like, that's true. I'm not because I think the way we're doing is more consistent with the oath that I was elected to fulfill.
Governor, Governor, I can't let you go without asking what's next for you. I've said it publicly multiple times. I said it on social media the other day that there has to be a significant place for you in our movement going forward. You're a young guy, your term limited out. What's next for you?
Well, we got to get through the midterm election, and we'll see. There'll be a lot of stuff down the pike. But it's interesting. I was the youngest governor when I got elected, and now I'm about to finish second two terms. I'm not the youngest anymore, but I'm pretty close. So I'm in my mid 40s, and most people don't get elected governor until they're in their 50s. But I think what we've been able to do, because look, we're on the right. I mean, we believe in conservative ideas. A lot of people do believe in that. But it was almost like there was so much frustration over many years. And I think it led to President Trump getting nominated in 2016. It's like, these guys never actually do it, right? They're not willing to do it. We saw a lot of the weak Republicans over many years fail to stop Obama and all this. When I came into a swing state, we had 300,000 more Democrats than Republicans. A lot of people thought it would be a blue state. All these races were decided by 1%. And I came in, I said, you know what? You only get one shot at this. I'm going to go bold. I believe in these ideas. I think they're going to be transformational policies. And if it ends up being that I went too right or whatever, or too bold, and it costs me politically, I'm willing to risk that, because I believe the upside's so much better. And so fast forward to 4 years later, I won not by 1 point, but the biggest victory any Republican has had in the history of the state. And we now have 1.5 million more registered Republicans than Democrats. Meanwhile, we've reduced our budget 4 straight years in the state of Florida. Our budget's $117 billion for 23.5 million people. New York has 19.5 million people. Their budget's $270 billion. We have no income tax, of course. We have a property tax rollback that's on the ballot for voters to be able to do. We've eliminated some state taxes and cut other state taxes. I've paid down half the debt for Florida's entire history. We knocked off half of it. Then we enacted things like universal school choice. We were really the first to fight the woke and corporations and the classrooms and the universities, and have had a transformational effect on all of that. So I think the lesson is of Florida, now people think it's like a political after. Of course it's red, right? No one was saying that 7 years ago. Of course it's red. Florida was always on knife's edge. But the lesson is bold colors, not pale pastels. We're right on these issues. And, you can't, like, if the left is rejecting the underlying foundations of our country, you can't really just broker a deal over that. You got to win. And no state has seen the left more thoroughly defeated than what we've been able to do in the free state of Florida. So that's a lesson for folks. It can be done. I know there's frustrations around the country when you look at some of these states and everything, but we've come a long way from where we were just 7 years ago. So we're running through the tape. We actually got more stuff that we're going to be doing. I mean, my view is I'm not going to cede any issue. If I can get it done, I'm going to get it done while I'm here. And so stay tuned.
Governor, appreciate you very much, sir. Stay in the fight.
All righty. See ya.
All right. It's got to be a place for him. Has to be. Something important. You don't just let a guy go back to the bench like that. No way. You know what else you don't do? You don't fund big wireless. These big wireless companies, they hate us. They absolutely hate our guts. You know that. You don't have to have one of these big wireless companies. You can have Pure Talk. I'm not asking you to sacrifice a thing. Pure Talk's on the same network. No contract. No cancellation fee. The company's run by a Vietnam veteran. And maybe most importantly, they hire Americans. When you have to talk to someone at Pure Talk, it will be an American who speaks English. Fraction of the cost of the big guys? There's no reason not to switch. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
What's your relationship like with the Senate Majority Leader?
It's fun. He's got to get his job done. It's fun. I have a good relationship with John Thune. He's just got to get his job done. You got to get the Save America Act passed. Or better than that would be the filibuster. If you terminate the filibuster, everything happens.
Tricky.
If you don't terminate the filibuster, only bad things will happen. If you don't terminate the filibuster, only bad things will happen.
Well, I feel like it's Groundhog Day. You know, great movie, by the way. But we wake up every day and Donald Trump is either on television or social media saying we have to have the SAVE Act. Thune has to pass the SAVE Act. And then on that exact same day, John Thune will be asked about it and he will go to the cameras and say he doesn't have the votes for the SAVE Act. And so forgive me if it doesn't feel like this is going to be round and round and round we go until November. Let's ask Scott about it. Joining me now, Scott Pressler, founder of Early Vote Action. Scott, I don't see any movement and I don't think I'm gonna.
Well, I would argue that we are building to capacity, Jesse, and we are seeing some movement in the fact that Democrat Governor Mikey Sherrill gave us a big, beautiful gift when she announced that 6,600 non-citizens are on the voter rolls in New Jersey and that 400 of those non-citizens actually voted, disenfranchising 400 legal, lawful American citizens. We're seeing illegal aliens on the voter rolls in Arizona and Michigan, and even in my Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And so now we do have proof, incontrovertible proof, that fraudulent non-citizen voting is happening. And I think this is putting immense pressure on the Senate, but we have a new fight right now, Jesse, because the clock is ticking and August 7th is very likely going to be the last day that we have to pass the Save America Act for it to be implemented for the November election. So I need everyone at home to contact your senators, even in Pennsylvania, and ask that the senators vote to cancel August recess and remain in Washington, D.C. until we get photo voter ID and proof of citizenship, i.e. the Save America Act attached to Budget Reconciliation 3.0. And that is the pathway forward, Jesse.
Scott, I've been telling people that, you know, we, as you mentioned, we found out about New Jersey, but even when it comes to New Jersey, we found out a teeny tiny bit. We still have to unpack a lot to get to the whole story, but New Jersey's one state. This is going on in state after state after state across the United States of America. There is more garbage in our elections than people can possibly fathom. What do you find about jury duty in Pennsylvania?
Yes. So as Anthony Ferlini exposed in Michigan, as Justin Heap exposed in Arizona, and as we are exposing in Pennsylvania, non-citizens are receiving jury summons in each of those respective states. And it is illegal for a non-citizen to serve on a jury. That is a right and a privilege only for American citizens. So in PA, there's a state law that says that non-juror list, i.e. people that are disqualified, that list shall be maintained by each county, the jury commission in Pennsylvania, that the list must be open to public inspection and the reasons for disqualification must be included as well. And so what we are doing county by county meticulously is getting the non-juror list. And I can tell you in Chester County alone, just from a couple of years, there are 3,566 non-citizens in Chester County, Pennsylvania, that received jury summons, meaning there are 3,566 non-citizens alone living in Chester. Now, read between the lines. I'm not saying those people served on the jury. I'm not saying those people voted. And I'm not saying that those people are not here legally. But what I am going to do is take the non-juror list, cross-reference them with the voter rolls, and we are finding non-citizens registered to vote and actively voting in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and we are exposing it all, Jesse.
Scott, I don't know that there's anybody in our movement that's spent more time on the ground than you have in recent years. Okay, well, you know about New Jersey, Pennsylvania. How prevalent do you think this is? I mean, my goodness, California, can you even imagine what we're going to find? How prevalent do you think this stuff is?
Well, look at the DHS. Look no further. The Department of Homeland Security told us in four states alone, Nevada, New Jersey, California, Pennsylvania, there are 250,000 non-citizens registered to vote. That is not conspiracy. That's not theory. that is documentary proof from the Department of Homeland Security that non-citizens are registered to vote in just 4 states. Imagine when we get the voter rolls for all 50 states, how many non-citizens are going to be both registered and voting in our elections. This is widespread. And I have to say one last thing while I'm on your program. Miller Meeks, Congresswoman, was elected by 6 votes in Iowa in 2020. John Duarte, Republican Congressman, lost his election by 187 votes in 2024. Al Franken in 2008 was elected senator the same year that Obama was first elected president by 312 votes. Those numbers, all three of them, are below the 400 illegal fraudulent votes that were cast by non-citizens in New Jersey. This is prevalent. This is widespread. This is a constitutional crisis.
Scott, midterms are coming, and obviously everyone likes to study national trends, myself included, but on the ground, the blocking and tackling, getting out the vote, motivating voters, that's the stuff that wins elections. How are we looking or not looking on the ground?
I did an event yesterday in Grayson County, Texas, a small suburban county outside of Dallas, an hour north, with Representative Shelley Luther, Governor Greg Abbott. And while we had 1,000 people, they were very inspired when I went on stage and talked about the Save America Act. This is a great galvanizer. I'm going to keep beating this like a gosh darn egg timer. If we want big, beautiful turnout this November, it would behoove the Senate to pass the landmark country-saving election security legislation that all of those senators campaigned on. However, Jesse, I was just in the great state 48 in Arizona for primary day. We had one of the lowest primary turnouts since the early 2000s. And really, how can we expect the base to turn out if with a Republican House, a Republican Senate, a Republican White House, we are not giving them the very thing that the base asks for? And so I ask again, call your senators, no results, no recess. Go through August recess, remain in Washington, D.C., give us and deliver what you campaigned on and what we elected you to do, and you will be rewarded with big, beautiful turnout this November on Tuesday, November 3rd, 2026.
Scott, thank you, my man. I appreciate it. Come back.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right. Let's talk about communism. Maybe my favorite subject. Before we do that, let me talk to you about debt. High interest, 20%, 25%. You're paying 30% on something. Look, if you do, you're not alone. I want you to know that. American Financing exists as a company because there are so many people in your situation. Do you have a mortgage and high interest debt? If you do, American Financing is here to help you. They're here to give you a path out of the wilderness. And I know it feels like the forest is too thick and you're never going to be able to find your way through. You can't even see your way through, barely making the minimum payments, all that stuff. American Financing has heard worse stories than yours. I promise you that. Get a hold of them and see how they can help you. AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse. We'll be back.
2020 election, the most secure in American history.
Most secure election in American history.
The most secure in American history.
Most secure election in American history.
Most secure election in American history.
The most secure in American history.
Most secure election in American history.
The safest, the most secure election we've ever seen.
Cleanest election, the safest election, the most secure election ever run.
Most secure election in American history.
The most secure election in American history.
The most secure in history.
Was the most secure election ever?
The most secure election in American history.
Let's just be clear, this is the most secure election in American history.
The most secure in U.S. history.
This, in fact, was the most secure election yet.
This was the most secure
election in history.
The most secure or the most secure election in American history.
The most secure election in history.
Most secure election in modern American history.
Most secure election in our history.
Safest and most secure election in our history.
Safest, most secure election we have ever had.
You know, that was when I knew they stole it. It wasn't, you know, the stopping of the counting and the ballot. I mean, I had suspicions like you had it. When I saw them all saying the same thing, that's when I knew. Joining me now, Dr. Bradley Thayer, author of the book America's 100 Years War, How to Win Against Communism, A Man After My Own Heart. Hey, Brad, was it the most successful election in American history?
Well, if you were a communist, it was. Certainly. But if you're an American, no. Or if you have an understanding of American history, American values, American identity, absolutely not. It's quite clear, Jesse, as you well know and have covered so many times, it was not. And it was a deliberate stealing of the election. And we need to recognize that's a communist tactic, and we need to understand that. The Democrats are a communist party. It's a Leninist party that is working in every respect on all azimuths to undermine American identity, undermine American institutions, and replace them with communism. That's the fundamental aspect. And the audience shouldn't be distracted by the DSA or other elements. The DSA is a front organization, right? I mean, that's the public face of communism, but the real heart of it, the nexus of it, is rooted in the Democratic Party. And you need to look no further than Trump's State of the Union address in February. When President Trump asked Americans and their representatives to stand to celebrate American heroes, and Jesse, you'll remember, right, that the Republicans stood and celebrated the naval aviator who shot down four Soviet MiG aircraft in the Korean War, or the Army aviator of the MH-47, who, despite being wounded, having severe wounds, was able to still land a Chinook and save essentially the Venezuela raid, right? The raid that captured Maduro. The Republicans and all Americans stood while the Democrats stayed seated, right? That's the difference. They were seated because they want America to fail. And folks, Americans were standing because they want Americans to succeed. That's the difference.
Doctor, there's no question there's plenty of homegrown communism here. And as you mentioned, one of our two political parties, they have that running through their veins. I wish more people understood how aggressive China is at promoting it here, at funding it here, at organizing it here. They're not passively watching the university system train the next generation to be communists, are they?
Not at all. I mean, they're working actively in every respect. Communists are really good at capturing the ideas industry. And the ideas industry is our universities, our K-12 education, our media, our think tanks. They know what to do. If you capture the ideas as Orwell identified in 1984, if I own the present, I can remake the past. If I can remake the past, I own the future. So if I own the ideas industry, I own the young people. I own the educational system. I own how people think about events. And I'm able to remake American history. The 1619 Project, Jesse, for example, as you know well, which is an abomination in the effort to remake American history. Or Mondami's speech on July 3rd, where he tried to remake American Independence Day, right? Where he tried to say America is whatever you want it to be, which again is an absurdity. Well, if I own the present, I own the past, and I own the future. And that's unacceptable, and that's anti-American. And absolutely a disconnect with American history, our values, and the spirit of 1776. Americans need to be aware of the communist tactics. This is what they do. Let's get smart about it. Let's understand on our side the tactics that they use and the intent, the strategy of what they're trying to achieve, and let's defeat it. That's the major argument of my book. We need to defeat it by focusing on what made America great and the values, our institutions, our identity, and our history, so that we can tell them to shove off, right? They've got no business being in America, as President Trump has stressed time and again in these last few months. He said, Americans are not communists, and communism has no place in the United States. And we need to take that to heart and recognize that's absolutely the case and tell them where they can go.
Brad, one thing we have in our back pocket, and you know, you're right about this, is their tactics don't change. You know, the tactics of tearing down statues, renaming things, destroying history, dividing people by things like race and whatnot. This goes back to the Bolsheviks. They do this everywhere they go. Mao was famous for this. They always do the exact same things. We have their playbook because it's been played out for 100 years now.
It has been, and it's quite clear. Look, they're not lying about what they want to achieve and how they want to achieve it. They're very direct. Lenin wrote a great essay in 1920. He called it Left-Wing Communism, an Infantile Disorder, where he said to communists around the world, use whatever works. Whatever your condition is or whatever your needs is, if you need to penetrate a political party, the Labour Party in Britain or the Democratic Party in the United States, go ahead and do it. Because whatever works is what's necessary to advance the communist revolution. And we need to recognize that spirit. That's what they're driving towards and what they've achieved, Jesse, by penetrating not only the ideas industry, but the Democratic Party, and why they're working so hard to essentially, now that they have, they're on the cusp of power, they're driving actively and openly as they never did before, right? They were always furtive. In the Cold War, if you call somebody a communist, that was a bad thing, and he had to defend himself. Well, today, if you call somebody a communist, he welcomes it, right, in the Democratic Party. It's a sign of progress in their mind. We need to recognize that and be worried because they're so open. They believe they're very close to achieving their objective of successful communist revolution.
Brad, highly, highly recommend your book to everybody. Appreciate you very much. Thank you for writing it. All right. Light the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And I should tell you before we play the video of this wonderful young man, lifeguard, first year lifeguard in California, saving the life of a little boy. As of today, he's been invited to the White House. Trump's going to give him a medal. So let it be known to all the young men watching, not only is it good to be a hero and save others, you might just get some cool awards and a pretty girl out of it. Here he was. Thank you. Pretty good stuff. Well done, young man. I'll see you tomorrow.
I would thank you for coming to my YouTube channel, but I know how brilliant it is, and I know you love it here. So subscribe and watch. We're going to start really ramping things up and putting some funny stuff, some interesting stuff out there, some collaborations. Either way, my YouTube channel is officially the place to be. So stick around.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.